Good morning.
Morning, morning.
I'm Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
And I'm Bettina, and I'm coming in hot.
Today's episode is called Finding Home. Bettina, what does finding home mean for you?
Finding home for me is still an ongoing process, but I'm excited about it. Having recently moved from California to the Midwest, I'm looking to put down my roots in an entirely different state. And so finding home is a layered topic for me because it's finding home in relationship, it's finding home in romance, it's finding home in your lifestyle, it's finding home for your family legacy. It's something I'm actively striving for. But for the first time in my life, I feel like I'm closer than I've ever been, if that makes sense. What about for you?
It's interesting for me to hear you say that because I have noticed in many different, so I've known you when you've lived in a bunch of different places, and I have always gotten the impression that you have made every location you happen to be inhabiting a home.
Right. Absolutely. I'm good at that.
I remember you had that little beach house. What was that place? It was in, where was that little beachy
one? In Torrance.
Torrance, that's what I thought, yeah. That seemed like a home. Your one in Pasadena that just, that insane Christmas tree you sent me that one time with the bows. It was like kind of a monochromatic Christmas tree. You always seem to make yourself at home. I remember you told me one time, I said, well, what would be, you know, your ideal your ideal night at home? And you were like, I'm wearing lingerie.
Absolutely. By myself.
Right away, I was like, eh? What was it? You were wearing lingerie. You had like candles. You had a book. Was it a book? What were you doing? What were you drinking? Something warm?
I'm drinking tea, like a beautiful tea, though. You send me beautiful teas, and that's one of the things I love about you. But I like a beautiful tea. I'll wear lingerie. I'm home by myself. I'm single. So I'm home by myself wearing lingerie, probably wearing heels. We talked about that before. And I am curled up with a fluffy blanket like my beautiful Linus that I'm curled up with right now.
So special.
Curled up with a beautiful blanket and an amazing book. And that with candles lit, soft, soft jazz playing in the background just ever so slightly. And I'm able to dive into this book and I feel amazing. And I might even have on earrings.
Oh my gosh.
That's a perfect night at home.
So a couple of things you just said triggered me. First was earrings. Earrings wouldn't be something I would consider wearing at night home. Because what it makes me think of is, you know that smell, like the smell of an earring in your ear? Do you know that smell?
That nasty smell? What are we talking about here?
That's what it made me think of. I was like, why would I introduce that into my perfect night?
You don't get that smell anymore. Like, it's when you clean your earring backs and when you clean your ears, you don't get that smell.
You do. No. You do get it. And then awesome. The other thing was the laundry. So this is one way we're opposites. In my ideal night, I am wearing the baggiest sweats imaginable. So the other thing with the laundry, I'm not a naked person. I know that laundry is not naked, but I feel sexy when I'm wearing very few clothes type of person. My legs, I feel like you have to have good legs to have laundry. I know you love your legs. That's a story
I do. It's my favorite part of my body.
I I've had cellulite since I was in fourth grade. I remember looking down at my legs smashed against like that. You know those chairs that they have, like the student chairs, like they're made of wood and they have nuts and bolts holding them together. And I was looking at my leg smashed against the wooden chair and it was cellulite. I was in fourth grade. So I just don't have the kind of legs that you just want to let them free, let them loose. And I just would never be comfortable. Like it's cold in my house. I would be wearing large sweatpants, a large sweatshirt. I would have the fluffy blanket. I would have the hot drink, but I wouldn't be masquerading about in my underwear with earrings. I would be walking around like a hobo.
As I'm walking past every mirror in the house, I'm probably giving myself a high five. I'm not even kidding you. A virtual high five.
Opposites. Oh my gosh.
Opposites. But, and it's funny because everybody knows this about me. So my kids will, you know, they usually have keys to the house and they'll text or call from outside and say, are you dressed? Because that's what they have to check on with me. Are you wearing clothes, Mom?
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I am so in awe of you. I don't even know if I wish I was like that because I just can't imagine ever being like that.
It's the best.
It sounds liberating.
It is. God meant for us to be naked. You do know that from the Genesis story. We were supposed to be naked. And so I always say when my kids come over and they catch me, like say if I'm walking through the house stark naked, somebody walks in the door and it's like, oh, why are you here? And they're like, why don't you have on any clothes? I'm like, this is what God intended for me. What did he intend for you? And so,
wow.
There are these encounters throughout their lives where I've traumatized my children. Poor things. poor things.
So let's do temperature check.
But did you give me your finding home?
Oh. Well, the intro, my own intro to finding home before we go deep is, wow, I don't know if I ever felt the feeling of home, because I was one of those geographical care people, so I always felt like I had a nest. You know, I was a pretty dysfunctional person in my 20s, and so I lived in, you know, in college, I had a sense of home there with my roommates or whatever, and then in New York, I had apartments that, you know, they were like my home base.
Mm.
I think now my definition of home is more stable. Like it's a stable, it's almost more like the home I built in my head, you know?
Mm. I think that also helps me understand why you're so intentional about home now.
Yeah.
And I think it's beautiful.
Because it's the first time I'm reinventing home. I think I went around like I had a high level of self-awareness, and that I was extremely honest, but there was a fundamental level of dishonesty I was always having with myself. So I was always sort of checked out, and I was always, I hate to say it, but I was always high. I was just high 24 hours a day. Like, I don't know how else to say it. Mm. I was always at a distance from whatever was going on. So my attempts to find comfort sort of ruled my life. So I always had a home. I always had a, you know, a place to be, but I wasn't really there. That's
right.
How I'm thinking of it now.
It didn't really feel like home.
I just think I wasn't at home within myself.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like as much home as I could absorb or understand at that time. I never felt out of place or like I didn't have a home, but I was homeless within myself.
Right.
So I was just never happy and I was never settled. And then I really didn't start to feel that feeling of being settled until really this house, because I moved into this house when I was probably almost 40. Isn't that sad? I spent half my life, you know, wandering, lost.
That's okay.
It is what it is. But
you got there.
So this home, the way that it's built out is that it's everything that my childhood self wasn't allowed to have. So the cabinets are like stacked with sour candy, for example. Like I have like
so
king size, family size bags of those giant Sour Patch Kids. I have probably like 5 to 10 containers of Haagen-Dazs ice cream in the freezer at all times. And I'm big into bedding. I go on bedding rampages. Like right now I'm yet again on a duvet hunt. I already know which one I want, but so I go crazy over bedding. I still haven't found my dream pillow. I found my dream sheets, my dream mattress. So my building out my bed is really important. Like I'm into sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to do a lot with the fabrics. Like that blanket that you were mentioning is a very big part of my existence at home, coziness. And I think, you know, it's becoming more and more so that my family is my home. So I was never a really big family values person. And the way I grew up, my family was kind of siloed and they didn't really show emotion. And I didn't feel that feeling of unconditional love. It feels like a real betrayal to say that out loud, but that's how I experienced it. So
right.
Regardless of whether it's objectively true or not, the way that I felt growing up is like I had to be perfect, or like there were conditions of worth, or that there was not the message of if you mess up, we still love you. It wasn't even really verbalized, we love you. So it was tough, you know. My parents are boomers and they didn't come from that either. So it's just I grew up with a lot of big emotions and nowhere for them to go and no way to navigate that. So home for me now, I never was a big family values person. Someone gave me an assignment to list my top five values. And I really, really dug deep and I found my top five values and family was not even on that list. So
wow,
it's, yeah, crazy, right? Because I know so many people that are like, oh, family's everything. Like that's just not where I came from. That's not how I ever was. But now that I have my own family, I've had to transform my value system and I've had to really bring family up to the top and into the center. And that's been something I've been working on, you know? And so now it's actually funny because I went, my wonderful partner gave me for Christmas, and we ended up doing it this weekend, 2 days ago. He gave me like a spa day with my three best friends. And it was so funny because, you know, like a couple hours or like 3 or 4 hours into it, I was just thinking, I want to go home and be with my kids and my family. Like I was just thinking of all these. I know it's so unlike me because normally I'm like out. But I was just thinking of this thing that my 2-year-old is doing right now where she's like, Mama, what color is this? And I'll be like, it's, you know, black. And she's like, good job. And it's just like, I just think of these little things and I'm like, oh, I wonder what she's doing right now. And she's so cute. She's just, I don't know. It's, I'm changing. So home to me now. And also with my fiance, he is not, well, this, we will get much deeper into this at a future point, but he is not anyone I ever saw myself being with. It was like, I keep saying to people, it's almost like I'm in an arranged marriage, and he is Indian, but it's like our marriage was, but you know how in Indian, have you ever seen Indian Matchmaking, best show ever? So it's, they have love marriages and then they have arranged marriages. And even though our marriage would, by Indian culture, by Indian standards, be a love marriage, it was not an actual arranged marriage. It was like it was arranged because it was just arranged by circumstance.
Right.
It was just like the time that we met, it was like we were the two people that were, you know, in the same place at the same time and single. And I guess everyone, to a greater or lesser extent, their relationship was probably arranged by circumstance, but it wasn't like a love match initially. So it's like an arranged marriage in the sense that we really grew together over a very long time period. And by very long, I just mean we've been together for 6 years, but it's almost like we're just starting to gel really more recently. So he's kind of a man's man, and so he's not a big talker, and I am a big talker. So it's interesting because now my definition of home has become someone I can just be quiet with. And it's not something I would have ever necessarily thought I was looking for, but I like it. It's nice because when I'm with my friends and when I'm engaging in my typical way, which is at a pretty, I'm laid back, but I'm also very intense. So my way of engaging with people is like, I like to whip the energy into a frenzy. Like I love talking. I want to amp it up. Let's go deep into it. But there's an emotion, not an emotional, but there's an energy price tag to that. So my sort of spiritual advisor type of person who's in my life, she asked me how many of your really close friends could you spend 24 hours a day with? When I was kind of expressing some doubts about my relationship, we were probably fighting or whatever. And she asked me how many people of my friends I could spend 24 hours a day with. And I said, honestly, zero.
Yeah.
I could never exert myself in the way that I do at like a 4-hour dinner for any longer than 4 hours. I'm capped. Yeah. I'm ready to go after that. I'm done. I'm drained. And so it's almost like, you know, God or the universe or whatever sort of delivered me exactly who I need, because I can spend 24 hours a day with him easily. We could just kind of pal around together.
What I'm getting is it's not about finding home, but making home.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to choose it. That's what it is for me. My mind could easily go elsewhere and say, well, I wanted this or that or the other thing, but it's actually an active choice I make every day that I, to want what I have, you know, instead of to go after something that I don't have.
I also love how you described the growth of your relationship, like from an arranged standpoint, because in the beginning, it's as if you don't know if this is going to work. You don't know if this is going to be your person, but you make the decision from the beginning in the arrangement. You make the decision that this is my person. This is who I'm going to settle down with. This is the person I'm going to start building with. And then all the other stuff comes. And I think that's such a mature way to look at relationship, because many of us go into relationships with, we need all the bells and whistles from the onset. Before we make the commitment, the real commitment that this is the person that I'm going to build with and this is the person that I'm going to, you know, lay down my roots with. And what happens is if one of the fuses in your bells and whistles kind of blows, then it's like the relationship is on a downward trajectory from that point. You know, and so I love the arrangement of it all, because the initial portion is a decision. And then from that decision blooms and blossoms everything else. And I think that's a beautiful way to approach relationship.
Well, you're giving me, I just want to stop right there. You're giving me way too much credit. I did not choose I'm choosing it now, but actually it's interesting because this relationship, I don't know if I've ever told you this, I think I have, but it started out as a hookup. So in the beginning, so like 6 years ago, I was going around telling everybody I know this is such a perfect setup because I would never date him. Ever.
That is funny. So it was
it was not a choice. I was making a choice to sort of live in a really detached way emotionally, kind of. So I was still dating other people. I was going on a lot of dates in New York City at that time. I was double booking dates, primarily with women. I was going to a hair salon opening in Chelsea with I think she was either German or Russian swim instructor, followed by a comedy show in the East Village with an aspiring stand-up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was, you know, honestly, it was exhausting. That's what it was. As stimulating as it was, it's so much energy to mm-hmm. move like that and to present your representative, like Chris Rock would say. When we first were together, I remember him telling me, he said in complete seriousness, my top five interests are, and let me see if I can remember them, food, football, sex, sneakers, and I think he said cologne. I might be misquoting him, but it was those five things. And I was like, okay, this person is not for me. You know, like,
dude,
I'm a pseudo intellectual, first of all. But, you know, and then when I was on, I think it was that night that I had the double booked date, I was just thinking, I have this one friend. She's like, I was weary. Like, it was hilarious. Tiring. And I just kept thinking, I just want to be home with Herschel watching football and eating pretzel bites with cheese sauce. That's what I would rather be doing right now.
Wow.
Watching football and eating cheese sauce.
Okay, so please tell me, wait, let me interrupt you right there really quickly. Please tell me you make your own cheese sauce.
I don't.
Tragedy.
I know. We need to talk about that because there's a substance my brother uses that keeps cheese from, I think it's coagulating. You know how cheese can stick together and it kind of becomes globby or becomes solid? Uh-huh. So I'm a total cheese snob. I love Murray's Cheese Shop in the city. I am really picky about how melty my brie is. There's no end to how snobby I can become about cheese, but as far as a melting cheese, I only really like either Cheese Whiz, American. Like, there's certain cheeses I have a marriage to that bad cheese.
I'm crushed in my heart right now.
Why?
I'm crushed in my heart. Crushed in my heart. That's it. That's all I want to share.
Well, I'm willing to open my mind to alternatives.
I'm going to make you a cheese sauce that's going to blow your mind.
Please do. Please do.
And you get to use your fancy cheeses when you make the cheese sauce.
I have a thing with, I don't like my fancy cheeses to be melted.
What?
I know. I don't like them to be melted. I wouldn't want to dip like a Tostitos chip into like a Dauphinoise, a melted brie. Like, no, they don't match. I want a yellow, you know, it could be like a
dark
pepper jack
yellow.
I want a spicy yellow, really. I think in order for it to have the right consistency, it has to be packed with chemicals.
And that's what I'm not doing at this point.
I might be totally wrong. I have an experience. When I try to make a cheese sauce, it's never the right consistency.
Yeah. So we're going to fix that. We're going to share that recipe one day.
I'm completely open. I'm so open-minded to finding an alternative. But right now, we're really about Tostitos salsa con queso.
I'm just traumatized.
Or is it queso? It should be queso con salsa, but it's – I don't know why it's reversed. Yeah, we're trash, you know? That's the thing about us. We're trash.
I'm traumatized by that because I know that we share a love of high-end cheeses.
Mm-hmm. I do.
And so the fact that you could eat Cheese Whiz just hurts me to my soul.
Oh, no. So that's the thing is my whole family's from Philadelphia, and I grew up with that. I'll never not love Cheese Whiz, even if I like fancy cheeses as well.
That is awesome. Awesome and not at the same time.
I mean, it's delicious, so I don't know what to tell you.
That was like a judgment.
Tisk, like a sort of a tisk, an implied tisk, tisk.
So I hear you when you're saying, you know, how everything started with the two of you. But I also love where, I mean, that it started there with virtually how we were talking about, just a pulse with no chance of succeeding. And here we are 6 years later, and you guys have built something pretty cool. So I think I give you credit for that.
Our relationship started extremely volatile. Mm-hmm. One or the other of us was storming out every 2 days. And there's just something ineffable, some ineffable quality, some something that kept us together. And, you know, and then there was a lot of work to be done. So we now, my family is my home. And it's so crazy for me to be even saying that out loud, because I swear to you, I was 1 foot out the door for the first 4 years. It's crazy. I was talking to my friend one time after Zumba in the parking lot of the gym, and I was just saying, I don't think I'm going to, you know, make it work with this guy. Like, we're fighting all the time. We had this argument recently. We're back into a cold war status. We're not speaking to each other. And she was kind of nodding, you know, bopping her head along. And then she was like, you should have a kid. And I was like, huh? Because everybody in my life is like, you know, sort of dismayed to find out about just how much I'm struggling in this relationship. And she's just nodding like this with all this positivity. And she's like, you should have a kid. She said, you, when you have a kid, you're going to have something in common.
Wow.
Thinking like, this is why I talk to this person, because her advice is so unconventional. Mm-hmm. But honestly, even though that sounds on paper like the worst advice in the world, it was the best advice in the world. We ended up having a kid, and now we have something in common. Now we have something to talk about.
And it took your attention off all those things that you may not have loved about him.
And put them on all kinds of other qualities. It's like, you know, now to me, the sexiest quality is being a good dad.
Mm-hmm.
That is so sexy. Like, honestly, I did actually always find him very sexy. He's like kind of like, he's sort of like mischievous. He has this kind of puckishness to him. Like, he's very young at heart. And even when I was really mad at him, it was one of those things where I was thinking, like, you are just like, I do find him so handsome. And it elevated our connection and my, just the way I saw him transform so much when I saw him, how all in he is as a dad.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, it's crazy. So I guess, you know, our home is like, we, like my child, it's just like what I think it's everything my childhood self would have wanted. So we've got the huge TV, we've got every single channel in the world, we have, you know, all the cheese sauces and the all the stuff. But it is just, it's that feeling of calm and that feeling of belonging that I, because this is now my family, that I'm coming home to the idea of being all in on family in a way that I never have before. And that sounds strange, because you would think like, oh, you want to be a mom, you would think that would be like right up there on your priorities list. But the thing is, I didn't want to be a mom. I never wanted kids. So it's just been a real journey to get here. But now I'm home.
I think something else I'm realizing in the moment that I never realized before. I know we've talked a lot about our, you know, upbringing and childhoods and the sorts, but I love that because his family dynamic is such that it is. One thing about, okay, when you grow up a certain way, you're going to do one of two things. You're either going to duplicate and double down on what you had when you were growing up, or you're going to do the opposite, right? And I don't know that you, even if you had made the decision to do the opposite and create a loving home for your children, you weren't thinking about children, but if you had decided to do, if I get the chance to be a mom, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, right? But when you added his family dynamic on top of that, you guys couldn't help but win in the parenting and family aspect. Does that make sense?
Tell me about what you think his family dynamic is. I'm very curious about that.
So I'm just thinking of it in a general sense, like with coming from an Indian background, where there is a family is huge and there are so many and they're always around and exactly. This is what we do. And yep. So thinking of it from that standpoint,
mm-hmm. You're dead on.
I feel that your friend that gave you the advice to have the kid, which would have never been my advice, it's so funny.
Not anybody's advice.
But it worked because when you think of it from a different vantage point, you couldn't help but win in that area. So I can see it for some reason.
And he whooped my butt into shape because I was coming from a place of only having to worry about me for my entire life and just being really selfish for my entire life. And especially because I'm in recovery from addiction, like the hallmark of the addict is just complete abject selfishness. Mm. And so it took a lot of unlearning and a lot of arguments and a lot of honest conversations for me to sort of wake up to how self-seeking I had been in my past relationships and in this relationship. And then seeing the contrast, you're absolutely right, the contrast of how he is. Like, he's always sharing, always giving, always putting himself second. And that is not something I have any experience with, honestly.
I have a funny story to tell about him right here, about him always sharing. Okay. So when we were in New Jersey, when we came to visit you guys, I just thought it was so generous that you guys were like, stay in our home. You don't have to get a hotel. You don't have to rent a car. We're so used to traveling and having this independence. We get a hotel that's close to our friends. We rent a car. And it's just the expense of travel. This is what we already knew that we were coming to see you. So this is just a part of the budget, right? So both of you were like, no, you stay here. You don't have to rent a car. We'll take you. We'll go together. And so that was so generous to us. So we just made up in our minds that, okay, well, while we're there, whatever we do, whether it's going out or, you know, going to events, we're going to foot the bill because we saved all this money on hotel and rental car. It just makes sense to us, right? So then we were playing this game. We knew that Herschel wasn't going to let us pay. And so we were having these conversations between us. I was like, okay, as soon as we order, just whip out your card. And he was like, okay. And so we were already going to put everything on the Amex. So I said, just make sure you have your American Express ready. So I said, okay, I'm gonna order last this time. So it worked the first time. We were able to pay, and Herschel looked. I can see him looking at Ernie like, all right, you got me, bro, but it won't happen again. And so the second time we went for lunch, I remembered being the last one to order, and I already had the card ready. I was ready, right? And so I just slipped it and paid. And the look he gave me, like, oh, really? Seriously? Roger that. So then we went to dinner. That was when we went to the steakhouse. And I think by the time, this was like a couple days after. So by the time we went to the steakhouse, he was on to our game and he wasn't going to allow it. And I just remember we were ordering. And once I told Ernie, I said, listen, what I'm going to need you to do is as soon as you find out who our server is, just go and give him your credit card. Don't even play with it because he's on to us and it's going to be a whole thing, right? And he's not. And this was the most expensive meal at this point. And I was like, he's on to us and it's not going to go. So you're just going to have to, as soon as you see who the server is, who our waiter is, just give him your credit card. And so when he went to do that, I swear, Herschel's outburst, he said, and I have to quote him exactly. He said, I swear to God, if you pull out your credit card and try to pay, I'm going to yell racism in this restaurant. And we laughed. I think we laughed for 30 minutes.
I forgot about that.
Because the racism card, we're Black, he's Indian, you're white. It was just so perfect. It was perfect. And he was loud. We laughed till I almost peed. And we still talk about that because that was freaking hilarious that we couldn't get away with paying for that last and most expensive meal.
Yeah, he's very big on always picking up the tab.
He's a giver. And I mean, I just thought it was generous enough that you guys had welcomed us into your home. So
well, that would have been no question. I love having people over to my house. Like that would have been, there would never be any point where you would stay in a hotel unless that was your preference. But my favorite memory from that trip, I don't know why this is. Do you remember when we were watching, what was it, March Madness? So we were just home watching college basketball.
Yep.
And Ernie and Herschel were getting into it over Steve Harvey. That was actually my favorite point, because Ernie was like talking, you know, something about, like, he had heard something about Steve Harvey. And Herschel, who barely knows Ernie, like, he got up and got into his face, and he's like, "Don't you dare effing say anything about Steve Harvey, my man, Steve Harvey." Like, it was so aggressive. And I was just thinking, why are these men who, like, barely know each other getting up in each other's face like this? But they were, like, loving on each other, too. It was just a very
they loved each other.
Confusing dynamic.
Yeah, it was so cool. But they, I love that they took to each other right away, because that was a question mark. Like, we knew what our relationship was, but we had no idea if they were going to gel or mesh. And it worked out perfectly. They were both, it just worked perfectly.
It did.
Home run, touchdown, buzzer beater, do it all now, top corner talking home run.
So let me turn the question around on you and do our life focus question.
Okay.
So what, I have two questions, but I guess I'll just start with the first question, which is, what to you makes a place home?
For me, what makes a place home is safety, is what I call perfect peace, shalom, shalom. And I can find perfect peace literally in the yard, just at admiring nature. Just having the space to be quiet, having the space to create amazing meals, and freedom to listen to great music and read amazing books and write amazing books and make good love. And, you know, like, home for me is varied. It is it's a sanctuary of sorts, because I think of it from the standpoint of my man. I think of it as, you're out in the world fighting, dealing with whatever the world has for you today. And when you come back here, you can shed the armor. You can shed whatever mask you had to wear out there. You can be bare naked. You can be whole. You can be 100% you. And that is what home is for me. When it comes from the standpoint of the children, it's safety. It's a harbor. It's a place you can always come back to. It's a place where your key is always going to work. It's a place where, you know, even if you have to say, "Mom, this is my kids. Mom, I'm hungry. What are you cooking?" And I'm like, "Look, I'm making tacos tonight. Come through." You know, and or whatever it is, they're able to come there and get a great meal. And when they leave, they're filled up again. Not just their belly's full, but their heart is full, you know. And so home is varied for me. It's big and it's small at the same time. But I think I just feel like home is what you make it, and that's what I want to make it for the people I love. When I think about it from the standpoint of my friends, I want my home to be a place that you love to come to, that when you're there, you know that there's going to be a certain ambiance. There are going to be great scents. There are going to be great sounds. There's going to be great food. There's going to be great conversation. And when you leave, you can't wait to come back. That's what home is for me.
So what I love about that is that for you, part of it, the first part of it, was that it has to do with the day-to-day. And I loved what you were describing you did in the moment, reading books, listening to music, writing books. It just kind of made me, kind of brought me back to what am I doing today from the standpoint of enjoyment? Because of course I have my to-do list. I have certain things I need to get done at work. I have certain things I need to do around the house, but I didn't really add in those moments that you were talking about where am I cooking something I love? Am I listening to something I love? Am I doing something I love? And that's really, really important. And then the other thing that really struck me that I have to comment on because it's such a huge aspect to home for me, but it's more of an aspirational aspect. So I noticed that a lot of my friends, especially in New Jersey, come from Mediterranean cultures, like they're Italian or Greek, or one of the features of their home life is food. And but by food I mean like an abundance of food. So one of my really close friends, she just had a 40th birthday party, and she's Italian, and her parents are, you know, off the boat, and she had a party for probably 20 people. And she cooked herself because she just finds a lot of joy in cooking. And the amount of food that she prepared, which is always the case with her and her family, 40, I kid you not, 40 additional people could have shown up and we would have been good food-wise.
Wow.
Now, what kind of menu planning is that? It's just like take however many people are coming and triple it? That is wild to me. And I grew up in a home where there was basically exactly enough for each person. So in my family, it's just, I don't know what that means or what's behind that, or if it's just like, if it's more like a Scandinavian thing, like what it is, but it would be something where if I were to say, oh, I'm going to bring one extra person, they would be like, oh, well, we've got to go back to the store because we only have like this exact amount of pieces of cod.
Right.
Whereas with my Italian friends, it's just like everybody is leaving with to-go containers, and that's how it is. And then that's how I want it to be. So when you said, you know, I'm cooking tacos, come through. I want it to be like that. I want it to be like that, for especially because I think about when my kids have friends, I want them, every home I've ever felt at home in that is not mine has had that quality of come one, come all. You know, it's, and I, when my kids have friends over and stuff like that, I want to be able to just easily pull up another chair to the table or be able to just easily create a whole abundance more of food for them, or just already have it. But it's been really, really tricky for me because Herschel does not like leftovers. So when I cook for just my family, which is just me and Herschel and my two-year-old and my five-month-old who just, or six-month-old who just started barely eating food, it's like I'm always just cooking exactly enough for that night because nobody's going to want to eat it again the next night. Or I'll have like one additional, you know, round of it that I can put into her lunch or that I'll eat for lunch the next day or whatever. But I wouldn't ever make, you know, five times as much food as I needed. So it's going to take a lot of adjusting.
Yeah, because
to cook on that scale.
And when you have teenagers, it's different. And preteens, it's different because you just look up and there are random kids at your table all the time. And so now, even though the kids are long gone out of the house, and I've always been the leftover queen. So when Ernie and I were married, he would always have, he was the, I called him the turnip king because there were always people coming over every football game, every basketball game. Don't let it, if there's a crosstown rivalry with UCLA and USC, or the house was going to be full. And so there were friends. So you know how when you're having sports events, you're going to kind of cook, make foods that are like hot links, barbecue, potato salad, you know, that kind of stuff, right? But there was always these couple of friends that he had that had come over our house not for sporting events, so they knew that I cooked well. There was always an abundance of food. So I there was this one guy that would come all the time and say, hey, so thanks for this big old spread that you have here for us, but I'm interested in the leftovers that are probably in your refrigerator. Can we talk about that?
Like he wanted to go into the archives of what you had cooked.
He wanted whatever we had yesterday or the day before. Like I don't want this. Like I could get a hot link at home. I can get barbecue at home. Like I want that roast that I know is in that refrigerator. I want some of those leftover garlic mashed potatoes that are in there. And so it was funny because but it was great because Ernie wasn't necessarily a leftover guy either. So he would eat a little, but I'm a leftover person. Like, we're going to eat it until it's gone. And so I would love that. I get it. You know, there's some greens in there. You want some? You want to make you some a fresh piece of hot water cornbread to go with it? You know? So when one guy saw him doing that and he was like, I want what he has. And I'm like, okay, so no. You know, I don't even know you like that.
You have to cut him off.
But yeah, so I'm so used to it because there was always more than enough. I'm going to devour the leftovers and I rarely, you know, throw stuff out. Like
that's what I was going to ask. Does that not create a lot of waste if you have so much that you can't actually eat it?
No, because so this is how I cook even now. That's why it's hard living in a state where the kids are not, because even now I'll call people, I'll cook, like if I make a baked ziti, if there's a recipe I'm excited about, I'm not going to just make enough for me. I want people to experience it. And so it's like, hey, I made 2 big pans of baked ziti. I'll send out a text to the people that I'm familiar with here. And I'll say, hey, I made 2 big pans of baked ziti. And if you want some, just come through and grab a serving. And so you'll have people just traipsing through the door. And I would do that with my kids when I was in California. It was like, I made a pot of chicken and dumplings. Whoever wants to come over, just come through. Because when you make it, you're not going to make a little, because I think about my kids don't cook like home meals like I do. Like Chice is getting better with that. My middle child is getting better with that now. But the oldest and the youngest, they pretty much live off of either junk food, like purchased food, or meal preps. But meal prep is cool because it you know helps you with your workout and stuff like that. But it's not like a meal to enjoy. So it's like when they're what they eat for fitness for their fitness life. So it's like baked chicken, quinoa, and some steamed vegetables. So it's not like chicken and dumplings with rice and homemade biscuits. You know what I mean? Yeah. So for them, I love to send that text out and trust they're going to come through. And then it gives you an opportunity to love on the people you love on. So I love that you get to create that anew because you have small children. So that's going to be your future. And it's a beautiful thing.
You know what's so funny is as you're saying that, there's like a psychological complex that's becoming activated in my mind, because I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and you just said there's a recipe you're excited about and you're going to make this baked ziti or whatever. If there was a recipe I was excited about, especially if I was trying it, in my mind I just went to a place where I was trying it for the first time and I was making a lot of it, I would never feel confident serving that out to multiple people unless I felt that it was perfect. And there's this complex in my head where I would be so worried. It's so crazy because that would never occur to you. Obviously, the way that you're speaking about it, you feel so comfortable doing that. But I have, I guess, this fear of failure or this fear of rejection, where I was just talking about this with my dad, because it's funny, my dad and I are both like this, where if we had made something where something went wrong and it wasn't perfect, but then we were on the hook for serving it to other people, we would scrap whatever we did and we would remake it so that we could serve it the right way. Whereas my brother, who regularly cooks for armies full of people, he has parties 4 times a year he's bought this hotel, this giant Civil War era hotel, and he has these huge parties, and he basically does the work of a caterer just all himself.
Wow.
He can just himself serve 40 people, like no problem, no stress. And when he messes something up, like he did this cheesecake where the top of it was too burnt, and he just put it out anyway. Yep, he just sort of trusted that that was just going to be fine, and it was true, and that people would kind of eat it or eat around it. And I was discussing it with my dad, and I was like, we would – like, I would stay up all night. Like, I would throw that one out, or I would keep that one for me or for whatever, and I would – but I would hide it, and then I would stay up all night making a completely different one. And my dad was basically like, yeah, I would do the exact same thing. And I think it's a people-pleasing thing. It's a low-trust thing. It's a perfectionism thing. It's a fear of failure and a fear of rejection. It's like there's all these psychological things wrapped up in it. And it's so to me, it seems so, like, foreign that you could just – I don't know, just give of yourself without having a fear of being judged, which is like, why am I even thinking I'm going to be judged when I'm doing a good deed?
When you're doing a good thing for them.
Yeah, it's wild. It's just, it's dysfunctional.
It doesn't come into the conversation for me. A couple years ago, before our wedding, I made the decision to give all of my children parties, big parties, the year before Ernie and I got married. And I did that because I told them, I said, next year is all about me. I may not even say happy birthday to you. So I'm going to celebrate you really good this year because you may not see me next year because it's all about me. And so for my son, his birthday was first. And for his birthday, I said, hey, I want to give you a party. We did it on the rooftop of his apartment in downtown LA. And I was like, I said, what do you want? I said, I'm going to probably cater food because he has the most friends of all three of the kids. I'm like, I'm probably going to cater food. And he was like, please don't. And I was like, what do you mean? He was like, don't buy. I want your food. And I was like, great. So what I did was I put a bunch of roasts in crock pots, in two crock pots. I put like four roasts in two crock pots and cooked them. And we made roast beef, like gourmet roast beef sandwiches with all these fabulous sides. And at the end of his party, so we're cleaning up, it's time to go because the apartment building had like a cutoff time. And it was hell getting those people away from the remaining roast beef. That was left over. People were looking for bags to put. I just need a bag. I'll get my own rolls and all that other stuff. I just need a bag to put some meat in. And it was like that. Gosh. And my baby wanted my food for his party. Roger that. I got
success.
You.
Success. Yeah.
So it comes from such a love place. Like for me, my cooking a meal for you is an expression of love. It's a love language for me. And so I don't ever worry about it coming out good or subpar because there's so much love poured into it. I promise you, if the recipe's off, you're going to literally taste love. So that's how I feel. So I don't even think about it not being perfect because how could it not be?
Wow. I mean, that's what I want. I want to always cook with the secret ingredient love and then just trust that that's going to travel with the food, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a neurosis. I even get like that when I'm not even doing the cooking, when I'm catering it. I'm thinking, well, is there going to be enough of this or is there going to be enough of this or what if people aren't happy? But I do want to give myself some credit. I had a breakthrough moment with Maya's first birthday party. So I think in basically all Asian cultures, the first birthday party is a really, really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a massive party for this little girl. We were calling it like Maya's Indian wedding. It was off the chain. Like it was at a venue. It was supposed to be in our backyard and it ended up being that it was going to rain that weekend. So we had to last minute change it to be in a venue and we ended up having it in this Indian wedding venue. it was so crazy.
Funny.
And we got it. It was thousands and thousands. I think it was like over 6,000. It was so ridiculous. Over $6,000. And so we got it catered and we decided to do Indian food because we had his whole family there. And then we also had all of our friends there. And it was so funny because my friend at one point, I get very thrown by people's advice sometimes because it'll get me into my head. And she said, oh, well, you should get like a tray of chicken parm or something for the people who aren't going to want to eat Indian food. Because it was a very big party. I think there was like maybe 60 or 70 people there. Mm. And this was the first moment where I just felt so at home in myself that I was just like, well, you know, there's a Wendy's on the way home and they're welcome to stop by there. Like, I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that I just felt like, this is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're Indian food people. It is vegetarian. And I don't care if everybody doesn't like that. And they can help themselves to something else. We're right in,
right.
You know, Edison, which has a million different types of food if they want to get something else. And I'm not going to concern myself with that. And I'm not going to take that on because somebody else feels let down or because somebody else can't. I'm not going to try to manage other people's emotions, basically. And that was really such a breakthrough moment for me. And it was actually worked out really well because so many people were like, oh my God, what is this, this chicken, this like spicy chicken thing? And it was like, it's paneer, you know, it's not meat. So it ended up that it actually was kind of a crowd pleaser.
Wow.
This delicious dry chili paneer. It's just like, oh my God, it's like Indo Chinese food. It's bomb. But that was my first breakthrough of like, I'm not actually going to people please in this moment. We're going to do, and maybe that's part of kind of finding home is like, our family likes Indian food. We also really like eating vegetarian and it's a huge part of their culture to do that. So we wanted to also honor the place, which was an Indian venue, and honor the culture. And that's what we were doing. And that's our home and that's who we are as a family. So you can like it or love it, you know? Yeah. And it was cool. I think I'm, because I know that's what I want to be less tied up with what other people think. That's the direction I'm moving, but it's just very slow going.
And I think it's only because your kids are so small. Because what's going to happen is as these kids grow and they develop their own palates and their own, everything is going to be about the nucleus of your family, right? And so you won't have the capacity to entertain what other people. It was when I have people over and when people are coming into my home, it's like, okay, I created these things. This is what I have for you guys. And again, it never even enters my thought process that someone won't like it or won't want it. And if you don't, I'm sure you're not going to tell me. You're just going to, like you said, stop on your way home and pick up something that you do want, you know, because it was grace for me to create this for you, to welcome you into my home for this time and to, you know, lay out the welcome mat for you. So it's my joy, but I wouldn't dare tell someone, hey, you got something else in there I can eat because I don't like what you laid out. I would never fix my lips to say something like that, right? So it's when you are able to let go of all of that, you can pour 100% of yourself into what you are creating for people to come into your home. And that is what allows you to 9 times out of 10 have a great product.
And I think I often forget to add the secret ingredient of love because I have so many hangups about, this is kind of why I don't really have dinner parties, is that it stresses me out. Like hosting stresses me out because I think, well, what if I were to mess up the dish and then people didn't like it? It must be very close to what if people didn't like me. It's tied to something deeper for me that somehow me putting food on the table is some type of manifestation of myself. And what if people don't like it, meaning they don't like me? And then I think because of striving for that perfectionism, I forget to add the secret ingredient, love, because I just have too many hangups. And it comes through in the food. You're absolutely right about that. Even when I'm just making food for my family, if I'm rushed or if I'm distracted, like it's not ending up as good. And then when I'm just living in the moment and enjoying it and cooking in this more meditative, more like focused, intentional way, I hit it every time.
Every single time you'll hit it out of the park. Because
so I guess you just live in that zone.
Well, no, because when I'm irritated, like if I'm made to cook, like say I'm working on all these projects in a day, I'm writing the book, I'm listening to a book, I am had to create a workbook for the accountability course, and I had to create something for the course. Sometimes I don't want to cook. And if I have to cook on a day that I don't want to, you can pretty much guarantee it's going to be not so great. So, and I know that about myself, so I don't do it. When I don't feel like cooking, I just don't.
I like
because that. Because for me, it's I want to be 100%, have 100% of myself into whatever I'm doing. I'm the person that lives with my phone on do not disturb or on silent. And I do that because I don't want to be interrupted when I'm doing other things. I want to have 100% of myself into whatever I'm doing. And even if that's cooking a meal, when I'm cooking, I'll put on some good music. I'm dancing, I'm singing, I'm cooking. So it's an enjoyable practice for me. And I really want you to, I was thinking about what you were saying about, you know, if they don't like it, then it could mean in essence that they don't like me. I want you to just I want you to think about the beauty of, you know, just laying out something for someone. So I would love to get to, you know, have you guys come here and let me shower you with food. I'll have specific meals that I'll prepare and just love on you in that way, right? Because I'm just not that deep. I always say I don't have tattoos because I'm not that deep. Right? I don't have tattoos because I'm not that deep. Like, nothing was that important for me to mark it on my body yet, you know? And so it's the same thing when it comes to cooking a meal. Like, it's just not that deep for me. It's either I'm doing it from love or I'm not. It's very simple. And if I'm not doing it from love, I'm just not going to do it.
Wow. I'm going to take that with me today because there are definitely nights when I am just like, I'm not in the mood. I don't want to cook tonight. And sometimes Herschel will be just like, let's just get pizza then. Like he's always the first one to just, let's just try to take a shortcut. And I have some type of martyrdom where I'm like, no, must cook dinner. Or it sometimes just has to do with the fact that there's like food in the fridge that I just have a thing about not wasting food. So if there's things that are going to go bad, like I have to stay on top of it, because I just hate food waste, but I'm going to try to embody that attitude.
Yeah. Give yourself some grace.
So then that's a perfect segue into our recipe. So today's recipe is a California-inspired dish.
For me, California represents tacos, period. I'm going to make tacos. It's funny, being here in the Midwest, and I was talking to people, the family that I'm connected to here. I was over one day. We just cook food and just eat in one house, have a bunch of family members over. And I was like, so do you guys eat like burritos and quesadillas and tacos? She was like, my kids know nothing about that because they were born in Indiana. So they don't know anything about Mexican food. And I'm like, have you made the babies a burrito? And she's like, I tried. It didn't work. I said, have you made the kids a quesadilla? She was like, I tried. It didn't work. And I'm like, tacos? Because at this point, I'm holding on to whatever piece of breath I have remaining. And the kids don't know about tacos. And I'm like, I got to make these babies a Mexican spread, you know? And so, but for me, tacos is that recipe. So I will, for tacos, I prefer ground turkey tacos. I'm that California girl. So I'll do ground turkey with, I'll chop up some white onion and some cilantro and have my little seasonings. I will use the Lawry's taco packet, but I also add a little seasoning, which is remember we were talking about our go-to four? My go-to four is a little bit of seasoning salt, a little bit of Cajun seasoning, a little bit of garlic, and a little bit of pepper, along with the taco packet. And, but that's just a good, easy, simple taco mix. And then, of course, I shred my cheese. I will slice avocado. I have sour cream. I have red onion. I have cilantro. I have some jalapenos chopped. I have tomatoes chopped. And I would rather make my own salsa or pico. And if I don't, I will use paste picante. I do still fry up my own taco shells or tortillas rather than having those pre, like the Taco Bell kind of. I don't like those. I like to make.
What type of tortillas are you using?
So I use regular, you know, tortillas like the, I can't think of the brand, but.
Like flour?
No, corn tortillas.
White corn or yellow corn?
Either is fine for me.
Big or small?
Depends on how I'm feeling. So there's this, there's the street taco size that I don't buy unless I'm making like carne asada or something like that. But if then there's this size between the street taco and then the large, I prefer to get the middle, the medium.
But it's corn.
But they're corn tortillas, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I fry those up and I make amazing tacos. And I used to eat a lot of tacos, but now I'm more of a three taco girl. And and yeah.
What do you mean by a lot?
I used to eat like five tacos.
Like five medium-sized tortilla tacos?
Yes, that's a lot of food.
Okay. Yes, it is.
I used to eat a lot of tacos. I'm like, do I need five? You don't. So So I'm more of a three taco girl now. But and it's that go-to meal. It takes all of 15 minutes to make. And it's always gonna be good. That's my California inspired recipe. What about yours?
Okay, wait. So first of all, I just have a couple more questions. Back up to the Lowry's taco seasoning. That I don't know about. What is that?
What?
You just told me about the Lowry's salt, the seasoned salt. I bought that. I haven't figured out how to use it yet.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to come over. I'm going to come over. I think I need to make an appointment to just come out and cook for you guys this year. But so the taco packet is like, it's, I don't know, like have you, when you make chili, do you use all of your own seasonings or do you also use like a brick chili along with it and or a chili packet where it's like pre-mixed seasonings? So for tacos only, I'll use the pre-mixed Lowry seasoning packet. So I'll, because it's just a good flavor packet and it's nothing but like paprika, maybe some chili powder, maybe some other things, but it's such a good mixture that I don't mess around with it. I'll add a little bit depending on how much ground turkey I'm using, I'll add a little bit of my own seasonings, but I'm going to do that anyway. So even for a pound, I'm going to add a little additional seasoning, but for more, I'll still use one packet and just go a little bit heavier on my seasonings. But
you're adding garlic powder, Cajun seasoning and pepper
and Lowry's along with Lowry's, my go-to four.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the reason why I'm asking is because I also use a packet for taco seasonings, but it is Old El Paso all the way.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's all I've ever used my entire life.
Oh, poor, but it's Old El Paso.
I've never even heard of Lowry's. I'm going to try it.
Okay, yeah, you should try it.
Okay.
You should try it. And it's good.
My last question is, so set me up for like the actual taco. So the way that I'm imagining it is, first of all, are you coating the tortilla with oil before you fry it?
Yeah, there's oil in the pan.
What kind of oil?
Vegetable oil.
Okay. So you're doing it's kind of a crispy, slightly oily corn, white or yellow corn tortilla.
Yes.
You put some of that ground turkey in there. I'm assuming you follow that up with cheese.
Yeah. So first of all, when you pull the tortillas out of the oil, you put it on a paper towel.
Yes.
To soak up the excess oil. But yeah, so I put cheese down first. Then I put meat. Then I put more cheese on top. Oh,
the cheese goes down underneath the meat.
Yes, honey. You have to. Yes. Yes.
You're just like, this is the most obvious
thing. We're cheese connoisseurs over here. So there's cheese first, then meat, then more cheese, then your shredded lettuce, tomato, sour cream, and then all your other stuff like
onion, jalapenos.
Yep. However you want to load it from there.
Salsa. Okay. I think what I've been really missing in my life, because we do tacos or enchiladas once a week minimum. But what I think I'm really missing is this, because I'm getting kind of bored of it, is the shredded lettuce.
What?
I like shredded lettuce, and I like that cold, crunchy.
Yes.
And typically we're doing a hot, like an enchilada, even when we're making a like a burrito of some kind. Recently, I haven't really been cutting up the shredded lettuce. So then I guess my question would become, what type of lettuce?
It's just iceberg? Plain iceberg or romaine, because I buy lots of romaine every other week.
Okay. So right. Well, I'm going to try that out. It sounds pretty easy. I'll just, the only changes I would have to make is I would have to get ground turkey and that different seasoning packet. Other than that, it's basically the same.
Yeah. So what's your California-inspired meal?
So it's funny because the part of what I thought we were going to be talking about, which maybe we still will, is our LA experiences and memories. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to think of what would be an LA-inspired recipe, but or a California-inspired recipe. But when I lived in California, I lived with my Uncle Bob, and in the beginning, for the first few months of living there, and he would make things that were not quintessentially California. So he would make a lot of comfort foods. Like he would do turkey with gravy on a piece of toast, or he would with like a side of corn with butter. It was, I gained easily 20 pounds in the first 3 months of living with him. Oh my gosh. The things that he made were so delicious. He made a lot of gravies from scratch, things like that. He made ribs a lot. He made, and he would make also like Japanese food. Like he would come home with a daikon radish that he would slice so thin and so artfully. Like he did it all.
Wow.
But none of it was that. I feel like the Japanese and the, he made, would sometimes make homemade sushi. That was like, the lighter fare was more along the California lines. But what I associated more so with him is he would make a lot of pizza. He'd do pizza from scratch. He would have a pizza party where he would just put out a million toppings and bake a million pizzas. But he would do comfort food. So it wasn't, if I were to say any of those recipes, it wouldn't be on, in the vein of California, which I feel like California is just a lot lighter. Mm-hmm. So my California recipe is actually going to line up. I have a lot of Uncle Bob recipes that I'll share down the line. Just that kind of soul.
Excited like, about soul that.
Enriching food. Yes. But the one that I'm going to share today is actually right along the lines of what you're talking about, which is, you said, making your own salsa. So I do make my own salsa. And
love it.
Yeah, and my recipe is called salsa, and I'm going to butcher this translation, but cruda. I don't know how I would pronounce that, but it's fresh salsa. Mm-hmm. So what it is you can do tomatillos. I don't typically do tomatillos. I just always have a ton of tomatoes in my house, so I do tomatoes. So you would do 2 or 3 large tomatoes, and you would have chilies. So the recipe calls for Anaheim chilies. I just kind of grab whatever chili happens to be in the supermarket. It could be poblanos. It could be serranos, whatever you're in the mood for, whatever they have. And then you would need jalapenos. You would need green onions. And basically, so you would have to chop all these things by hand. I have tried doing it in the food processor, like dropping it into the Cuisinart or whatever. It's completely different. Don't even do it. I think it goes back to that cooking with love thing where it's like, is it time consuming to chop tomatoes? Oh my God, it is. It really is, because those skins are so tricky. Like you really need a sharp knife to slice through a tomato, because you need it to be chopped really, really small. Like for me, I don't want a big chunk of tomato. Tomatoes are relatively bland typically, especially in the winter. So I don't want a big chunk of tomato on my tortilla chip. So I want it to be chopped really, really small. And it takes a long time. So you have to really surrender to the fact that this is going to be a meditation in chopping. You have to chop every single thing by hand. So you put the tomatoes in, you could put the chilies in, the green onions, the jalapenos. Sometimes I'll add onion, cilantro. And then the seasonings are very, very simple. So you just kind of make this vat of vegetables just in a big bowl. Then you do 1 teaspoon ground cumin, 1 teaspoon fresh lime juice, 1 teaspoon sugar, 1 teaspoon fresh cilantro, and then you can put salt and pepper to taste. So it's very simple. Really simple, but it is so, so good.
I think the sugar kind of threw me because I was looking. Yeah. When you think salsa, you think acidic. You think, you know, but the sugar threw me. So I can't wait to try it.
Yep. You got to do the 1 teaspoon sugar, the 1 teaspoon cumin, 1 teaspoon lime juice, 1 teaspoon cilantro. So it's just 1, 1, 1, 1, salt and pepper to taste. But yeah, it's delicious. It is so delicious.
Oh, that sounds good. I'm going to try it.
Okay.
I'm going to try that.
What else?
We crushed it again.
I was That's so funny. Okay. Here's a California memory for you. This just reminded me of, when I was recording my album in San Francisco with my band, I was falling apart at the seams because I felt like everything we were doing wasn't good enough and we weren't going to get all the songs done and this wasn't right and maybe this wasn't up to par. And it was so funny because my guitar player of my band, Dan, was just like every single thing he did, he'd come back into the room and be like, that was dope. Like he was just so happy with himself and everything he did. And I was like, oh, what it must be like to feel that level of, you know, I won't even say delusional overconfidence because I do think overconfidence will get you everywhere, but he's legit confident. He is an incredible guitar player. But it was so funny because I was just looking at our list of what we were going to cover, and I was like, didn't hit that, didn't hit that. And you're like, we crushed it. Just like always. It's just,
I love it. But I think this is what makes us us. It's the ability to skip over some things and linger in other things. And it all comes out. To me, it all comes out in the wash. And so I can have a little bit of that I have been known to be overconfident a little bit.
I love it. I want to be, I was thinking, I want to be like Bettina. I just want to be like you in that way.
It has served me well. Let me say that.
You're still going.
It served me well. So I don't regret being that way.
If I could just get a little piece of that, I would be so happy.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And you are like you're a great soul. So, and I wouldn't change anything. I feel like the overconfidence wouldn't really match.
I'm getting more comfortable in my skin as I age, and I definitely heard that with, you know, once you hit 40, hopefully a lot of that, like those insecurities just kind of like fall away and you start to be like a little more like, you know, giving zero, you know what's, I'm coming closer to that. I just want to tell one more little story before we go. I have a confidence role model for every quality that I want. Like I have a confidence role model. So, or that quality, that blank quality role model. So I have this friend, and she's in her 50s, and we were at the beach, and she's wearing workout gear. It's kind of a cooler day, but we're at the beach. It's the morning. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning or 8. We got there really early. This place fills up in the summertime. And she's laying there in her gym attire, and I said, Eileen, you are so hot. Like, she just had her hair was in this messy bun and she was wearing sunglasses. And I was like, you are so hot. And she goes, you like that?
That's such a Bettina thing.
Yeah. And I was just like, who says that? Who says that? And 9 out of 10 women would be, or 99 out of 100 women would be like, oh, me, no. Or at least, at the very least, thank you, or some form of humility. But instead she's just like, you like that?
So funny. One time I was, we talked about me dressing at work in an episode, and I came into work and I felt, you know, just really good this day. And one of the guys in the lab complimented me and he was like, Bettina, you look good today. And I was like, right? Right? You get it too, you know? So I get that.
I get that too, actually. I have been known to say right if I'm feeling it. Yeah. I think I'm closer than I think.
Yes. And I love it. I love it. But it's one of those things. It goes back to if you look good, you feel good, which is why I'm 100% wearing lingerie in my house at night by myself.
Exactly. And I'm not coming anywhere near that because there's no world in which I would think I look good in that.
That's so awesome.
But we'll see you next time. Have a great 24.
Enjoy your week.
Bye.
Sports mode, big bye. Every single time bet on myself, that's on me. East, west, north, south, all scenes. Worldwide, big waves, all seas. Same car, same clothes, still me. Only thing that changed is a change that's on me. Home run, touchdown, buzzer beater, do it all now. All now, top corner talking home run. Touchdown, buzzer beater, do it all now. Ball now, top corner like.